Hello, and welcome to Out of My Mind in Costa Rica, where we talk about all things related to post-traumatic stress and complex post-traumatic stress, which means the content in this podcast can be graphic. And if you suffer from PTSD or complex PTSD, keep in mind you could become triggered. Should that happen, stop the podcast and take care of yourself. If you want, you can always come back later. I'm the guinea pig here, and it is my life I examine on Out of My Mind in Costa Rica. It is my hope that my trials and tribulations, successes and failures, will somehow compel you to examine your life and discover your gifts. Socrates said, "A life unexamined is a life not worth living." This is a call to action for all of us. As a clinical social worker for more than 25 years, this was my trade, my vocation, and from personal experience, I can tell you, without a doubt, that what you don't know can hurt you. My entire life, I've been compelled to support and encourage people to grow, to boldly look within and courageously examine their lives. Shine your light onto those dark spaces, and the solutions you seek will reveal themselves. Now, please, have a seat, relax, and listen to Out of My Mind in Costa Rica. Hello, and welcome to Out of My Mind in Costa Rica. I'm your host, Ray Erickson. Today, I'm talking about depression, mainly because you just can't have PTSD or CPTSD without depression. It's a package deal. Depression has been a lifelong component of my life, and it has taken me decades to learn how to recognize it early and intervene in a way that actually helps. This will also probably not be the only time I feature depression on Out of My Mind in Costa Rica, because, like me, you probably need repeated exposure to good information. Here's a brief update regarding communication with my wife. Even though there has been some communication, she has not responded specifically to the email I sent a couple of weeks ago. This is not a good sign. But as part of my efforts to heal myself, I'm trying really hard not to take this personal, not like I did in the past. In fact, I could cite literally dozens of experiences where I have been triggered by something she has said or done. But all that would be is whining. And if you're going to heal, you must stop whining about all the unfairness, the injustice, and misunderstandings that have occurred in your life. You must take responsibility. And whining about these things does not help. Depression has been a big issue in my life because each time I have been triggered, the depression followed. For years this went on, and I had no idea what was happening. I didn't know I had CPTSD. I just knew something was going on. I tried a number of psychotropic medications to address the symptoms, and these included, and they are not limited to, drugs like imipramine, dexedrine, wellbutrin, and even Seroquel. I was thinking the main problem was attention deficit disorder, and the doctor was thinking bipolar disorder. Looks like we were both wrong. This was a really difficult time in my life. My relationship was going down the tubes, and nothing seemed to help me control the angry outbursts. Even though depression was a huge problem, the bigger problem was the explosiveness that occurred with increasing regularity. Sure, I had all the symptoms of depression, but I would muscle my way through the depression, not knowing the problems were due to PTSD. Complex PTSD didn't exist medically in those days. This was especially difficult. I was in the mental health field. I was in private practice, and I was also a co-coordinator for the local chapter of a professional social work association. I was a madman running around pretending I was doing fine. I can't count the number of clients I would see when I was more depressed than they were. Fortunately, the very act of being there for someone acted like a short-term antidepressant, and I could, for for that 50 minutes be focused on their needs. There were other days when I needed to cancel all of my appointments and go back to bed. Eventually, the depression began to break down my ability to function. In addition, an underlying aspect of my development included an insecure attachment style. I didn't know this either. Therefore, most of the depression I experienced came about in response to my failures, whether it was academic, professional, or interactive with the people that I loved. There was always an external reason to explain why I was depressed. I would crash, and in a day or so, life returned to normal until the next triggering event. I want to be clear here. I was rarely triggered while in the act of a professional interaction. All of my triggers were within my personal relationships, in particular, my love relationships. But depression wasn't always a result of having failed in one form or another. Depression would creep up on me even at the most joyful of times, as if I didn't deserve to be successful, or the belief that I was a fraud would creep in. After all, how could a person who never had children be able to help parents who were struggling with their children? This self-doubt also infiltrated my mindset when it came to my book, 10 Tips to Tame Your Teen. Who was going to buy a book written by a man who's never had children? But it's a wonderful book, backed by more than 40 years of working with teenagers and families. It is filled with expert observations and wildly effective interventions delivered with sincerity and compassion. Heck, the Kindle version is free right now on Amazon. Check it out. Sometimes, while listening to music, an audio chapter will cue up and I listen to it. I know it sounds narcissistic, but it's just really good stuff. And I keep telling myself that I need to publish the audiobook. But life intervenes, and that has yet to happen. Maybe soon. It depresses me that the book has not had greater recognition, and if I knew how to correct that, I would. Social workers, however, are not natural marketers. We are a humble lot, and we are uncomfortable with tooting our own horn. This is why we need so much help if we want to reach a large audience. We have everything going for us: education, experience, and an ability to communicate complex ideas into an easy-to-understand and acceptable message. It's our nature. Social work is not a choice, it's a calling. Social workers are born out of crises, and I am no exception. I was born into an incest family. Talk about a vortex of crises. These families take the cake for crisis. One of these weeks, I'll go into detail about my family. But for now, let it suffice to say that the seeds of depression were sown into the fabric of my subconscious as a child. I say this because for much of my childhood, I lived in a dissociated state where my world mirrored the world of Beaver Cleaver, the 1960s sitcom Leave It to Beaver. Thank God, I really hate to think about how bad depression would be in my life had I not dissociated from what was really going on in my family. There are two basic types of depression, intrinsic and extrinsic. Intrinsic depression arises from internal conditions, whether it's nutritional, hormonal, or due to an imbalance of brain chemistry. Extrinsic depression is a response to an external stimulus, whether it's the loss of a loved one, a job loss, or a failed attempt of some sort. Extrinsic means from the outside, and intrinsic means from the inside. Oftentimes, these two types of depression team up, and one leads to the other. But regardless of what comes first, the problem is still depression. And depression is dangerous. Let's take a look at how psychiatry views depression, as described in the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, or the DSM. According to the DSM, depression is defined as the following. The individual must experience five or more symptoms during the same two-week period, and at least one of the symptoms should be either 1. Depressed mood, or 2. A loss of interest or pleasure. So those are the first two: depressed mood most of the day, nearly every day. And 2 is a marked diminished interest or pleasure in all or almost all activities most of the day, nearly every day. 3 would be significant weight loss when not dieting, or weight gain or decrease or increase in appetite nearly every day. Also, there's a slowing down of thought and a reduction of physical movement, which is observable by others, not merely a subjective feelings of restlessness or of being slowed down. There's fatigue and loss of energy nearly every day, as well as feelings of worthlessness or excessive or inappropriate guilt nearly every day. There's a diminished ability to think or concentrate, or indecisiveness nearly every day. There's also the possibility of recurrent thoughts of death without specific plan, or a suicide attempt, or a specific plan for committing suicide. These are just thoughts that go through the head of a depressed person. To receive a diagnosis of depression, these symptoms must also cause the individual clinically significant distress or impairment in social, occupational, or other important areas of functioning. The symptoms also must not be a result of substance abuse or another medical condition. Now, the above information was taken from psychcom.net, and the link is provided in the episode description. Wow, what'd you think of that stuff? That's a boatload of stuff going on when someone is depressed. This is what goes on when I'm depressed. The DSM calls it major depression, with an emphasis on the term major. Everyone experiences bouts of depression. Life can get downright depressing. There needed to be a distinction between what most people feel as natural response to certain life experiences and the kind of depression that steals your life and devours your soul. Therefore, the term major is added to depression to stress that this is not your day-to-day depression. This was something much more powerful and destructive. This isn't just a down day. It is major depression. Now, there are many websites out there with tools you can use to determine if you have ever had major depression or if you are currently experiencing major depression. The one I like and I've used for many years is from a book by Dr. David Burns, and the book is called The Feeling Good Handbook. The book was published in 1980 and became the foundation for cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT. This is one of the most effective psychological tools in modern psychology. CBT is just as effective as medication is for alleviating depressive symptoms. It was also a mainstay in my private practice and my work with teens and families. If you are experiencing the symptoms of depression, then CBT is a great place to start. I encourage you to add a little bit of CBT to your treatment regimen and just see how it goes. When it comes to CPTSD, depression is like a kick to the groin after you've been triggered. Speaking for myself, major depression, or what I simply will call depression, always occurred following a triggering event. Does that happen to you? I would bet a dollar to a donut that you too have depression after being triggered. So, what is it about being triggered that also triggers depression? For me, it's a dump truck of guilt and shame. I am deeply ashamed, and that opens the door to depression. I can only speak to my experiences with depression, and if my experiences resonate with you, then hopefully my efforts to deal with depression will also resonate with you, and you will give them a try. One of the reasons I have tried to avoid situations where I could be triggered is in part due to my fear of the depression that I know follows. I could be triggered for 2 hours, and then for 2 days, I'm clinically depressed. And on many occasions, my mind would be flooded with self-damning, suicidal thoughts. This is not a particularly good investment of my energy. So every time I am triggered, my bloodstream is infiltrated with a hormonal cocktail that sends me through the roof and over the top, regardless of the situation. My response is 100 times what it would be considered a normal response to any triggering event. Suddenly, before I can even think, chemicals such as cortisol or epinephrine, norepinephrine, and adrenaline are injected into my system. All of these chemicals are basically uppers, which means it's like snorting like 5 lines of cocaine or methamphetamine. I'm zooming, I'm clear-headed, and I'm laser-focused. You don't want to argue with me at these times, just like you wouldn't want to argue with an outraged 6-year-old boy. And just like the meth addict, there's a letdown once his chemical cocktail has subsided. There's a vacuum of sorts that gets created in the mind and the neurotransmitter hormones such as dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin. These are released into the bloodstream, lowering the body's resistance to depression and mood regulation in general. I became severely depressed, and my initial response is to shut down and withdraw. So I do. This used to be a place of shame for me, but now, after many years of experience seeking solutions and gathering information, I realize that this is a natural state one experiences in the face of trauma. That's a relief. I thought I was going mad, but it turns out it is perfectly natural to feel depression in the aftermath of being triggered. Talking about depression is not easy for anyone, me included. It is very personal and very painful. And besides, people don't know how to respond to someone with depression. But the good news is there are lots of websites out there that will help you to understand depression from a medical perspective. I created what I call OOMCR, OOMMCR, to be your voice, to speak for those of you who are struggling with depression as a result of complex trauma and PTSD. So here we go. First things first. Depression is serious stuff. Don't minimize it or belittle yourself for being depressed. I know this is easier said than done, and I can hear your doubting self-talk right now, telling yourself, this is all just bullshit. What does he know about my depression? I don't know about your depression, but I do know about depression. I know what helps to alleviate depression from being the scary monster that it may have always been for you. I want to turn on the bedroom light and show you that there is no monster under the bed. And it's okay. It's okay to feel safe and secure in your own skin. Feeling safe and secure in your own skin is a cornerstone of well-being. There are many paths to this state of mind, and that is exactly what it is. Depression is a state of mind. And when you change your view of depression, it no longer can hold power over you. I am not saying depression will pack its bags and get on down the line. No, that's probably not going to happen. But what can happen is over time and slowly, there will develop a lessening of the impact that depression has on your life. First, you choose not to fear it. And then you choose to embrace it. Not in a I give up mentality, but embrace it like an old friend who has been keeping watch over you all of these years. Part of the struggle people have with depression is their natural urge to fight the depression, to go to war with depression through denial, rationalization, and a host of other cognitive errors, because that's what depression does. It distorts your perception of what is real and triggers your brain to focus on your powerlessness. You're not powerless. When I realized I was not powerless over the depression that always flooded my senses following a triggering event, but I could actually act in ways that opened my mind and body to accepting the depression as a natural response to a triggering event, I no longer had to fight. I could go with the flow, and this has made all the difference. Accepting depression as part of the healing process has changed my life. Oh yeah, I still get depressed, whether or not a trigger is involved. Hell, the mere thinking about depression can trigger an impulse to walk up to that edge and look over it and ask myself, should I just end it all? This frees me to accept depression as part of my life. It no longer defines my life. I am not fighting with it. I am allowing depression to be a natural part of my greater self, part of my own story, and part of how I learned to take care of myself. I have replaced the self-loathing and the self-hatred with self-acceptance and self-love. I'm not perfect at this, but I don't expect to be perfect at mood regulation. But I do notice I'm making progress, slowly but surely. The depressive episodes are less frequent, they are less intense, and they are shorter in duration. I call it the judo approach to managing depression. Under no circumstances do I recommend you do any of this stuff without first consulting with a qualified healthcare worker to determine the type of depression you are experiencing and what the best approach is for you at that moment. If you are experiencing any suicidal ideation, the first step is to see a specialist today. Not tomorrow when you may feel better, but today. Got it? Call 911. Don't think twice. It could just save your life. People with CPTSD and PTSD generally have a pattern that includes alternating bouts of anxiety and depression, and oftentimes settle into a tolerable level of both. Most of us function pretty well most of the time, but sometimes you just need to step back. You need to put your phone on do not disturb. Put on your best pajamas and go back to bed. Let the world be the world. It will survive without you for a day or two until the depression is past. There is no shame in stepping back and taking a time out. You have earned it and you deserve it. So take it, goddammit. Tell your family you're going on a vacation from the world and not to bother you until you are ready to re-engage. It may be hard to do this, but it's a critical step to truly loving yourself. True love means complete acceptance, and true love needs to include you. This is not in the least selfish or narcissistic or lazy. It's an act of true self-love when you accept all of yourself. Not just your upside, but your downside as well. As terrible as it is to feel the burning pain of major depression, it is much more dangerous to ignore it. That pain is not going away until you tend to it. And that means you need to look at it, to examine it, to understand its purpose in your life, its function. Ask for the help you need. That's an act of courage. Reach out to the people you love. They love you too. Tell them what you need from them, because most people don't experience depression and don't know what to do with depressed people. You know what you need. Tell them. They will be relieved and feel good knowing that they are helping, and you will feel their support, which is like a magic pill with depression. It's pretty hard to be depressed when you're surrounded by people who genuinely love and support you to your core. That, my friends, is some of the good stuff in life. If you want the good stuff in life, then you must be willing to go for it. And it might just mean you have to be straight up with your friends and help them help you by telling them what you need from them. Nobody can read your mind. I also encourage you to sit quietly with the depression and in your mind, step back as if you're a scientist or an independent observer of your life and just look at it. Just watch it. Where is it located in your body? What thoughts are associated with the feeling of being depressed? What does the feeling depressed feel like? What is the origin story for the depression? How old is the depression? And what lies beneath the depression? These are some of the curious questions that cross my mind when I am depressed. The answers vary over time, but there is a root source for everyone's experience with depression. And that root cause, in most cases, is abandonment in one form or another, somewhere, sometime, at an incredibly vulnerable age, you experienced the futility of life, even if it was just for a brief moment. But that moment was indelibly etched upon your brain, literally. And that image, for better or for worse, is the image that binds you to the depression you feel. So who was that child? And how was that child impacted by their experiences of utter and complete abandonment? These questions are not to be taken lightly. They lead you to the deep and dark areas of your psyche. And if you're like me, you have a curious nature about you, and you'll want to explore that darkness because you have the desire to know your true self. What greater purpose is there in life? You don't need to do this yourself. I'm here for you. The people you choose to let in are there for you as well. So go ahead. Dig in. Dive deep. Your true self is waiting to make your acquaintance. When you understand the role that depression has played in your life, you have an opportunity to rewrite the script and give your life a new focus, a new ending, one that is healthy and filled with love and abundance. We all have our own journeys that we do completely on our own. The world we build within us is reflected in the world around us. So it is up to me and it's up to you to be the difference maker in our lives. Don't be the victim. Be the victor. Even though it may sound like a load of bullshit, go ahead and put yourself first. Love yourself first until the love begins to ooze out of your pores and you are one with life again. Optimism beats pessimism every time depression rears its ugly head. Stop fighting depression and start understanding depression. I don't know what else I can say, at least for today. I believe I may have said enough. Hopefully, enough to motivate you to actively engage with your inner world. Get to know it. Make friends with it. Your true self is a pretty nice person. Thanks for listening. And if you don't mind, please take a moment to make your voice heard. Comment. A review Out of My Mind in Costa Rica on those platforms that allow that sort of thing. Also, I'm sure that all of you know someone who may benefit from my fucked up life, so please share Out of My Mind with Costa Rica. You may just be saving a life. Also, be sure to take a peek at the episode description and check out the websites I have found that will give you a bit more information about PTSD, CPTSD, and depression. So, until next time, be courageous, be strong, be kind. I'll catch you later. Bye.